kingly confidence, masculine mastery, fearless freedom. Welcome to the podcast that supports you to show up in the world as the unapologetic, unfuckwithable, free-loving king you were born to be. Join Masculine Mastery Coach Mark Usher on a journey to releasing conditioned stories of unnecessary stress, struggle, and shame, while unlocking unlimited levels of inner peace, power, and prosperity in every area of your life. Fearless freedom comes to you as you self-authorize your masterpiece life, knowing in your truth, you move with nothing to prove. You are enough. And now, Mark.
Kings of Freedom around the planet. I'm excited and pumped and really in the zone here to invite you all into this topic, the warrior way to ending inner pain forever. As with every topic, it's my endeavor is to bring topics of deep interest, of deep value and meaning to you powerful men around the world. And I mean, what could be more powerful and more impactful than clarifying a path in how you can relate with your inner pain in a way that energizes you, that reveals your power, reveals the beauty of life, reveals the infinite freedom, the fearless freedom that lies beyond that inner pain, beyond the gauntlet of fear of avoiding pain. The path of masculine mastery, you know, the core masculine practice is being embodied consciousness, being present. And presence, you know, we would, by default, we would just all be sitting present, perfectly present, fine, at one, sitting with profound felt embodied inner peace in every moment of our life, if we had a perfectly fine, balanced, healthy relationship with inner pain. The main reason why there is so much all-pervasive mental hyperactivity and mental unrest within the vast majority of men around the world is because our relationship with pain, with inner pain, has been, in many senses, bastardized by the social conditioning, the shaming of what inner pain means to us. Going into the depths of it, well, I've went into the depths of this before, but repetition is mastery. You know, it's this conditioning that we were met in this profoundly sick society that imbues, indoctrinated within us as young boys, that inner pain, and, you know, like, well, what am I meaning by inner pain? Inner pain is, I suppose, any emotional state that you feel deeply challenged by when you feel it, when it comes up. Quite often, if you're early in deep men's work, you know, you mightn't have words for what those challenging emotions are. I know I'm quite early on my path in being able to label the exact precise emotional state that I'm in. You know, I've met many, there's a friend of mine, he have this beautiful conversation with him, and he sort of was smiling at, He was loving, he acknowledged me for the amount of work I've done in the last few years, but, you know, he has went really deep into emotional states and how much he can unpack and the words he can put to it. It's like, it's beautiful to witness. But wherever you are in the path, you know, every single man experiences inner pain. Some of you listening in will relate immediately with it. You'd be like, yeah, you know, and maybe you're consciously aware, maybe you're speaking with people about this, maybe it's the inner chatter of your mind, but you will instantaneously know what I'm talking about, inner pain, within your daily, weekly, monthly, yearly experience. It could be deep anxiety, could be depression, a deep sadness inside of you, a lack of fulfillment, just a background feeling of inadequacy. It could be in your whole life, or a deep inadequacy or fear within one realm of life, like relationships could be a disaster zone for you, finances, bodily appearance, you could be overweight, whatever it is, you know, some of you will immediately be, you know, resonate with the idea of inner pain. You'll be like, yeah, actually, I get that. I have an inner pain. I have this quite active inner pain. Some of you might be sort of in between. And on the other extreme, some men, and I'm holding my hand up, as always, is sort of, I'm very engaged with these. I hold my hand up. It's a podcast. You don't see it. But anyway, I energetically and literally have my hand up. You know, for years, if you were speaking with me when I was in my very early 20s, the mid-20s, the whole fucking train came off the tracks and there was like a massacre of my psyche, and I've been piecing it all back together since. Not back together in the sense of rebuilding what was there before, piecing it back together with deeper meaning, and it's a daily ongoing process. But in my early 20s, you know, if you were speaking with me and if you said to me something along the lines of, Mark, like, what's your relationship with inner pain? Like, do you have inner pain? And I would have given you what to me at the time would have been like actually quite an honest answer. But like, no, I don't actually experience inner pain. I definitely wouldn't have been curious to ask you or get curious about the topic, what do you mean by inner pain? Because if I had the 38-year-old me speaking with the 21-year-old me, a few questions from the 38-year-old me with the 21-year-old, I would have been able to put heat under that 21-year-old ass and sort of, with consent of course, break apart that story. But genuinely, without that sort of external support, my answer to you would have been, no, inner pain, I'm good. I'm confident in life, you know, I'm going good with academics and going good with life, with friends, and I wouldn't have mentioned anything about lack of having a queen, a girlfriend in my life. I wouldn't have mentioned deep inner lacks and inadequacies that I had in relationship. I just wouldn't have mentioned them. Now, would that have been because I was lying to you? Actually, not really. Because I remember back then, I was investing so much of my energy keeping together this outer facade that I'm fine, I'm confident, I'm good, that it sort of kept it all together to the point at which I actually was minimizing and normalizing to such a degree these parts that I didn't want to go to, that the facade was so cemented in place that I would have honestly answered, no, I'm good. I'm actually feeling good. I actually even remember going to a psychotherapist or a psychologist in the University of Limerick. This memory is just coming up for me. And I remember at the time, you know, I went in and I sort of smile now because having done the professional training within coaching, trauma work, etc., etc., I can smile back and really put myself into the shoes of whatever his job title, psychotherapist, psychologist, counsellor, etc. I know where he was coming from because I don't know what age I was I 19, 20? The 20-year-old me went in with was, I was reporting that my one issue was that my parents at the time weren't, by my eyes, getting on. You know, there were certain things that were showing up at home. So I went into him to speak about my parents' relationship. And you know, his questions weren't really focusing on my parents' relationship. His questions were asking me, bringing me back home to me, how was I doing? And every single question he asked, I was like, oh, well, I'm fine, actually. I just have my concern about them. Is this affecting your relationship? Are you sleeping okay? I'm sleeping fine. Is it affecting your college life? No, my results are fine. Is it affecting, you know, your social life? Etc., etc. He was bringing it back to me. And my answers were, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And, you know, I believe it just was one session. I know now there was a subconscious part of me wanting him to invite me back. There was almost a sense of disappointment when, you know, at the end of the session, he effectively summarized it as like, hey, you know, Mark, you know, you have concerns about your parents, but it's like, you can't impact them. You know, they've got to do the work themselves. You can suggest that they go get, you know, you could suggest a service, whatever, but it's up to them. It's like, only come back to me if there's something that I can support you with. If this is creating like a strain, a stress for you. I forget the exact words, but it was like, it was putting it back to me. And I was like, no, I'm fine. I'm good. Thanks. Thanks very much. You know, I was like the 20-year-old. Thank you very much. You know, this wasn't a literal part of my mind, but it was like, there was this resistance to, no, I don't want to come back here to have my facade picked apart. You know, if you want to ask me questions about my parents. So he had the wisdom, of course, to know this Mark guy in front of me. He clearly knew there was stuff going on within me. But like with all the questions he was asking, I was just insisting I was fine. You know, I wasn't yet ready to embrace that that process, that healing process, and open up. So he left it with me. There was a sense of sort of disappointment going out that he didn't invite me back anyway. You know, maybe like he should have known, he should have insisted more. But ultimately, it was for me to open up. You know, you can bring a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And I know now, you know, there's certain guys with coaching, when I'm speaking with them, there's no miracle bullet. No matter who or what the coach is, what experience, you could have the world's best coach. And, you know, if you're just not willing to open up, if you're not willing to do the work, if you're not willing to go there, well, there's nothing they can do for you. And this is all to do with the relationship with pain. I'm just giving you those early days with myself, and you know, it has extended. I've spoken before, my first 12 years of marriage, how I was relating with pain within marriage. I was shutting off. I was dissociating from pain. I was using blame, blaming my queen. I'd end up blaming my kids as well. I was blaming life for my financial woes, blaming, you know, all of these situations. Effectively, my main strategy, my main way of relating with pain was avoiding inner negativity, was avoiding, like the plague, any unsettling, challenging emotional states that I just didn't want to go there. So, I just want to touch base with yourselves. So, you know, there's that first group of you that might have that immediate relatability or resonance with, yeah, inner pain, I get that. And you might be able to label it. You might be able to go, yeah, I have a deep inner struggle with those inner demons to bring me down. And, you know, you might be aware that you turn to drink, you turn to addictions, porn addictions, you might avoid certain aspects. You might be really acutely aware on a very intense inner level of inner pain. You know, I bow to that. I bow to your awareness of that, and you bring your fullness to it. I also just invite some of you, you know, could it be some part of you that maybe the initial wording of inner pain, you'd be like, no, I'm good. I'm good. My invitation to you, if you're a bit like the 20-year-old me that has this immediate, no, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm feeling really good. You know, I'm confident. I'm sure of myself. My invitation to you, there again, always, to open up to the possibility that very often there's an inner pain that's there. There's an inadequacy that's there, a fear that's there, a pain, a suffering, a level of shame that could be so deep down in underneath this superficial part of your persona that's working overtime to keep that part locked away, that uncomfortable part locked away, that, you know, that they're, in the vast, vast, vast majority of cases, there is something there. You know, it's just sit for long enough in the presence of a Buddhist master, you know, a teacher, sit for long enough in the presence of a spiritual teacher, sit for long enough in the presence of, you know, I'm a masculine mastery coach, sit long enough in my presence, it won't be very long, with a true, honest, radically honest and sincere intention to reveal yourself and to sit into a healing and open-hearted space, and you just go with the flow of those conversations, it doesn't take long to dig and reveal what's lying in underneath the layers of all of this facade, all of this level of absolute security where your mind is has yourself set up. So for those of you that, as I say, might have this thing of inner pain, you know, I listened to this podcast episode, but you know, it's not really for me. Or maybe you're like already going, well, maybe not this episode, you know, this isn't for me. My invitation is just hang in there. Relax into this topic. Relax into, you know, just have a spacious, playful question mark. Maybe there's something in this for you. Maybe there's an inner pain that just hasn't been given voice to. My invitation is to just relax into this and see where this roller coaster brings you and honor what comes up. At the beginning here, I want to bring up two definitions of pain that has come up for me, for myself and my personal journey several years ago, and has really tended to serve me really powerfully and has served men that I'm coaching one-on-one and within the membership, introducing this idea, the distinction between two different ways of relating to pain. The way I related with pain for the vast majority of, you know, from my upbringing, those initial formative years, as they're called in psychotherapy, 0 to 8, 8 being sort of this, not exactly set in stone, but roughly around 8 or 9, the vast majority of your beliefs, of your emotional set points on key areas of your life, from what you've learned by osmosis at that point, from your parents, from society, etc., 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 your belief system is pretty set, and you start creating your life from that belief system. Unless you have, you know, quite deep inner work, or you just go to some crazy, amazing, spiritually enlightened society, or move from the age of like 9 or 10 onwards, that's going to be the set place, belief system, the foundation from where you start perceiving and entering and navigating life from. So the vast majority of men, including myself, go from the first acronym for pain, which is PAIN, persistently avoiding inner negativity. Persistently avoiding inner negativity. And our minds are quite sneaky, quite actually ingenious in ways. You know, there's a lot of this thing out there in spiritual language where, you know, the ego is the enemy. The ego is this malevolent, devious aspect of your being that's out to get you. It's like it's evil. And yet it's that part of your mind, again, honoring that part of your mind. The reason it was birthed was to help you get through traumatic events that emotionally, psychologically, you just did not know how to digest at the time when you were 3, 4, 5, 1, 2. There's even traumatic experiences within the womb that there's unique, brilliant researchers out there doing work on. You know, it's as the emotional, psychological system is evolving, we have these experiences that set in place our relationship with pain. Now, the part of our psyche that as we experience these traumatic events, there's a part of our psyche that forms new ways of thinking, new ways of reacting, of responding within certain situations to help us survive, to help us reduce the risk of being kicked out of our family. You know, it's like maybe an abusive parent, an abusive brother, sister, there's bullying, there's manipulation going on. I mean, if you go against the tribe when you're 3, 4, 5, you know, you're going against, effectively, you're going against people that help your survival. You're going against people that provide a bed at night, that provide a roof over your head, that put food on the table. So your survival, if you really, 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 now I mean completely go against that, you can get kicked out of the tribe, or beaten, or given out to more, or abused more, or, you know, just alienated from the table. You're not going with the family norms, with the family traditions, with the family ways of doing religion, religious practices, the family ways of humor, the family ways of politics, the family ways. You know, you just have these traditional set in stone ways of relating. If you don't go with those, it becomes a very alienated position to set in the outside. So the part of your psyche, the part of my psyche that formed ingenious ways at navigating those early years, it's not to be attacked. I really want to make this exquisitely, exceptionally clear. That part is not to be attacked. It's an ingenious part of your psyche, of my psyche, of our individual and collective psyches, that for me needs to be honored, appreciated, and loved ferociously, and accepted for the fact that it did what was necessary. You know, if you had an enlightened mentor that you met with 2 hours per day, you know, from the age of 3, 4, 5, 6 up, and you just went off. You're like, you went off from your set world and you went off with this enlightened mentor, this badass conscious man that would just talk you through at an age appropriate level these teachings of what was going on and what was happening and why you were emotionally, you know, experiencing these things and what you could do and how you could approach it, that you could honor your truth, but you wouldn't get in trouble, you wouldn't get kicked out, etc., etc., etc. Your life would be fundamentally different. But how many men, how many boys, how many children have that? I mean, it's practically non-existent in modern society. So there, yeah, just, you know, in forming our relationship with pain, you know, this avoiding inner negativity, well, if you and myself, you and I individually, there again, I'm just bringing it back to, it's like, relate with this, I invite you to relate with this podcast like I'm speaking with you. So like there's a part where it's, oh, this is intimate. He's actually speaking with me. So you can be walking, running, you can be in the car, wherever you're listening to it. Just, I invite you to become active with this. Like, embrace this. Actually embrace this, not like avoiding inner negativity. That's a passive listening, is avoiding inner negativity. I'm not going to go deep on this topic. I'm just going to listen to this in the background and it fills in a slot in my mind on my way to work. Fills in a slot of activity, mental activity. It puts my attention on something as I run, as I jog, as I walk the dog. Now, the invitation is always just come in, lean in, be asking, what relevance is this for you? So the persistently avoiding inner negativity, that is predominantly, for the vast majority, and I mean like 99.99% of men, boys growing into men, that is the relationship with pain. Maybe not on all topics, but by the time you get to early mid-20s, it's like, there's a point, I believe it's like in your mid-20s, where it's like, that's who you are as a man. Unless you do deep inner work, you go away on retreat for like 3 months, 6 months, doing deep dives into shadow work, you know, just really going into childhood dynamics, your belief systems, you go into deep coaching, etc., etc., etc. I think you get the point. By your mid-20s, there's this idea, I know who I am. And you just go from there. It's like the beliefs don't really change much beyond that. So who you are by your mid-20s, that's who you are in relationship. That's who you are in work. And of course, you might adapt and upgrade some belief systems and thought strategies, but predominantly you're not really going to change how you navigate and embrace life from there without deep work. So by the early mid-20s, most men are persistently avoiding inner negativity. Because of that social shaming, because of this deep social shaming of a belief that, well, you're a total fucking failure. You're a fuck up. You're weak as a man if you're, you know, sad. If you're not up and at it and totally confident and absolutely secure in who the fuck you know yourself to be and able to navigate life, sexual desire, parenting, finances, work, purpose, you know, you're on fire. You're just fucking the shit. If you're not that, and you actually have deep insecurities on some parts of your life or all parts of your life, if you're experiencing annoying background anxiety about life, deep depression, mightn't be a clinical depression, but just this background sadness where, you know, you get out of bed and it's like, it can be a bit of a struggle to get out of bed. It's like, why are you? There's just this part of you. It's like, why? You just, your psyche, your nervous system isn't giving you this mad energy. It's actually feels like it's taking your energy. Life just feels a bit meaningless. Or there's, you know, deep unspoken anger, frustration in the background, gnawing away. You're just unhappy with people in your life, with how life is showing up for you. You know, we start avoiding inner negativity because we have been so indoctrinated with that early relationship with challenging emotions that the strong association is we're weak, we're failures. There again, reminding ourselves, you know, to be human and loving and accepting with ourselves. You know, by me bringing this up, it's not another part of society going, well, you're fucking up here. So, if you're avoiding inner negativity, hey, there's another fuck up. It's just one more thing. You're not doing well. No. If you have been like I was, there again, my hand going up, for years avoiding inner shame, inner felt inadequacies I had in so many aspects of my life, if you've been avoiding those feelings, it's because you weren't feeling safe to go there. And that's okay. Within this society, like, effectively the weight of responsibility is off your shoulders. You did not grow up predominantly. Most men have not had a safe space where they could empty their heart, where they could speak with a mentor, they could speak with somebody in their community that would hold a sacred safe space for them, like an elder that would go, yeah, I hear you. You know, I go through stuff like that. This is what you can do, or not even just form a solution, somebody that would just be with you and be present and honor and acknowledge you for the courage of how vulnerable you were. So you could start relating that, oh, actually, it's a massively courageous thing to embrace this inner world. The vast majority of men have not had that. Boys growing up have not had that. So the first way of relating is persistently avoiding inner negativity. How does that work out? Well, just look at society. I mean, internationally, globally, one man per minute commits suicide. I don't know about you, but I hold my hand up. I have been very, very close. There again, mid-20s. I said earlier on in this episode, mid-20s. Because I was persistently avoiding inner negativity so extremely, so fucking ashamed of the depth of inner struggle I was having, that when it hit me, you know, the 20-year-old with the psychotherapist, counselor, you know, that just, I'm fine, the default, I'm fine, I'm good. That level of avoiding inner negativity, when the castle, the facade, the sandcastle, it was actually like a sandcastle, what the fuck is the metaphor? It's like a castle of cards, you know, one gust, mid-20s. First baby just out, living in a different country, marital issues galore, my fear of the feminine, like I was swamped with it, my fear of life. I was feeling so fucking lost and alienated. I was deeply suicidal. You know, the strategy of persistently avoiding inner negativity, for trying to form a way of life where I could kiss the ass of life, I could charm people, I could be nice, a Mr. Nice Guy persona, that if I just am constantly nice, I show up and tell people the nice thing, it just wasn't working anymore. And when the wheels came off, it came off hard. Now, obviously, at this point, I went beyond that. But there was a deeply suicidal period there where suicidal ideation, I was going around, it was like, it was the fantasy escape. It was like, wow, the thought of being able to commit suicide was like a soothing, there was a soothing part to it. There was a soothing nature to it. So, like, you know, that was really the quintessential persistence of avoiding inner negativity. It was like finding relief in fantasizing about committing suicide. But it wasn't working for me, and it doesn't work for you, and it doesn't work for any man. It really doesn't. You know, at some point, life will hit you with a shovel in the fucking forehead. Some of you will have noticed this. You know, it's like, I've shared with you the time of publishing, the time of recording. You know, it's like my mother, 3 months ago, 3.5 months ago, I got that phone call. It's like the stomach cancer diagnosis. I mean, it's life hitting me with a shovel in the forehead. The shovel in the forehead for you could be, I don't know, it's like your kid just not talking with you, your wife leaving you or cheating. You know, you find out she's just gone totally distant. Whatever, your business just crashes, crumbles before your eyes because you just haven't been facing, you know, your whatever, like facing the changes that you needed to make. You knew you need to make them 12 months ago, 2 years ago, but you didn't. And now it's just life whacking you on the forehead with a shovel. Life does this. Your body, I look at the book here to my side, Gabor Mate, When the Body Says No, effectively it's like the cost of hidden stress. But what it's all about fundamentally is the body says no. It's like when you avoid inner negativity and you're insisting with avoiding inner negativity, the body will form a cancer. The body will form a depression. The body will form an anxiety disorder. The body will form a physical illness that just stops you in your tracks and makes you, forces you to reflect. So, persistently avoiding inner negativity doesn't work. And if you insist beyond it, life will smack you in the forehead with a fucking shovel and will not apologize. The other way of relating with pain, it's another acronym, is PAIN, Pressure Awakening Inner Nirvana. There's important elements of this. There's pressure. You know, pressure is there. It's not a sugarcoating a dog shit and saying like it's a chocolate eclair. No, there's no bullshitting. It's being real. You know, the distinction that I like to use in my own life is I embrace the intensity of life. I refuse to make it hard, but I accept wholeheartedly it's intense. It's actually coming from my, in the last number of years, my new evolving, ever-deepening way of relating with pain, with life. It's intense. It is intense. Deep, intimate relationship with your queen, with your loved ones, with your kids, with your partner, with your king, with your colleagues, you know, clients, etc., etc. It's intense. Relating with your body as your body changes, as it ages, you know, the grief of passing your passing days of youth when you might pick up a few more injuries now, you have to be more conscious now because whatever, mid-30s, 40s onwards, it's like, wow, you know, you pick up injuries a bit more. Whatever, it's intense. It's intense. How do you relate with loved ones dying? How do you relate with loved ones getting old? How do you relate with life? It's intense. It's stupendously hard when you're persistently avoiding inner negativity, trying to navigate life without ever feeling any of those challenging emotions. The pressure part, pressure awakening inner nirvana, pressure, the intensity of life, it's intense to live wholeheartedly, to feel into life, to open up your lover archetype and feel with full sensitivity the grief that there is in life, the anger that you might have at social injustice, at poverty for some and riches for others, at inequalities around the world in many different forms, things that just aren't right, and you know they're just not right, but being able to see that and feel into it, it's an intense journey. So pressure is an inherent part of it. And part of your greatest freedom, you know, the title of this episode is The Warrior Way to Ending Inner Pain Forever. The warrior embraces. The true warrior embraces. Like, think about training. The training of warriors. The training of warriors. Think of martial artists. Think of Navy SEALs. Think of old samurai. Think of any warrior system of training. Think of sports, athletes. You know, training reveals how you relate with pain. Sit with that, because most men have done some sports training. Quite a number have done martial arts training, and you know, a lot of you will, you mightn't have done a military training, but you'll relate. There's a lot of super cool teachers out there, you know, that like the Jocko Willink, or I think David Goggins, there's Mark Devine. These are the guys that come up for me. They're all ex-Navy SEALs. I like their approach, their teaching approach. You might have your own guys. But all of the training of warriors, it's seeing how a person relates with pain, relates with anxiety, relates with fear, relates with self-doubt. And the training weeds out the guys that just can't hack it, don't want to form new ways, can't keep up with that level of intensity. The training is an optimizing and a rigorous way. There's so much challenge put in front of you that if you stick with it, and ultimately nearly all of these guys will say, well, all of them will say, it's like there's nothing superhuman about them. They just learn to stick with it. They learn whatever inner strategy was necessary to just see the training out. And the training, the process of training, was the thing that brought about the miraculous connection with this incredible power within them. Jiu-jitsu, martial arts, the exact same thing. The black belts will say, it's like, hey, I just stuck with it. I just insisted beyond all of these times when I had massive inner doubt, I had fears, I had inadequacies, I just stuck with it. Others drop off. There's nothing inherently different between the black belt or the qualified Navy SEAL, the warrior, the samurai, and the so-called regular guy. The ones that got to the black belt stage, they just stuck with the training. So pressure is an inherent part of life. But it's embracing that. Learning to embrace it. It's like, I am okay with pressure. I actually bring it fucking on. Pressure awakening inner nirvana. Like, the pressure, by embracing the pressure, that is the stimulus that awakens inner nirvana. Some of you might be familiar with nirvana. It's an Eastern term, many different layers to it. It's like sort of the Eastern way of describing maybe inner heaven, a profound inner peace, inner enlightenment, where there's such a radical freedom where you're just at home. You're at one with yourself. You're at one with life. It's perfect inner peace and calm. So it's like an ultimate self-confidence. But that level of self-confidence, that level of inner peace, it's completely inaccessible if you're avoiding inner negativity. This is the point I really like, you know, this is Kings of Freedom, the Kings of Freedom podcast. It can be a cool sort of, you know, cool podcast. Oh, I like that. But it's Kings of Freedom. We like really want to rigorously challenge you to deepen your relationship. You guys that are listening in, and you guys that might be fresh in on this episode, that's the point. It's like the core of masculinity is we grow by challenge. Kings of Freedom. It's not just a cool name. It's like the king archetype. It's the ultimate freedom archetype. It's your ultimate truth. It's your ultimate expression of life. Your complete freedom where you can live and die without regret. Freedom is the core essence of masculine. The masculine core essence is the yearning and the striving for ultimate freedom. But there's no ultimate freedom and there's no inner freedom, outer freedom, if you're avoiding inner negativity. What I bring here is like, you know, I mentioned Gabor Mate earlier on, and like there's beautiful work he's doing in the world, and there's lots of teachers that are really working intensely to bring a more trauma-informed element to healthcare, mental healthcare, to create a trauma-informed society. So one of the main reasons, and to bring a bit of just trauma-informed information into this, you know, why is it that we end up avoiding inner negativity from a trauma-informed perspective? Earlier in this episode, you know, I was speaking to the fact of childhood trauma, traumatic experiences that we have. But what is it that actually happens within you, within your body, within your nervous system, within my nervous system, the nervous system, that we end up switching into default avoidance of a negative emotional charge that we don't want, where we don't want to go? Effectively, the traumatized nervous system, alarm bells go off in it whenever there's a state of nervous system arousal. Now, arousal, you know, we can have lots of fun with it as men, a little bit of inappropriate sexual innuendo and fun. Arousal, you know, classically it can be arousal we associate with sexual arousal. Yeah, well, that can actually be a traumatized experience for men. It was for me. Sexual arousal, actually just bringing it in. But going beyond the sort of bit of humorous, side humor, sexual innuendo, arousal is just any time that the nervous system going, like you're at a state of total relaxation and calm. Arousal is anything that sort of just peaks it beyond that. There's excitement. There's arousal is when it gets switched on in a slight or ultra intense way. And this can happen really, really quick. But the traumatized nervous system, its aim is to protect your nervous system from ever getting into a hyper-aroused state. Because arousal is sort of translated within the traumatized part of your nervous system, unique to whatever the experience could be for you. So maybe there's some parts of your experience where, you know, when the nervous system gets aroused, you might really like it. You know, you could be really successful money-wise in business. So arousal there is like it turns you on. You get into flow. You're in the confidence mode. But it could be arousal like in deep intimacy. There's a bit of an argument coming up. There could be fear of feminine. There could be fear of, you know, sexual inadequacy shadows, whatever it is. So arousal within the deep intimacy area, any arousal would be like, oh, shit. Like, it's like there's danger. There's death there. Finances for myself, that's one where an arousal there, my mind associated, my nervous system subconsciously associated arousal there with stress. I linked profound stress looking at parents growing up and they're magnificent what they achieved, but you know, I just saw that, you know, it was predominantly one parent working to provide for a 4-kid family and extraordinary what they achieved within that, and it was amazing love there. But I picked up like from my perspective, there was a lot of stress linked with money. So I brought that as an emotional set point with money. So anytime there was an arousal around money, I would go into avoidance. I wouldn't want to go there anymore. So the traumatized part in the nervous system, anytime an arousal, anytime, and it can be an arousal to happiness, to excitement, to sadness, to worry, to anxiety, to depression, to grief, whatever, whenever that happens within your nervous system, if there's a traumatized part of your psyche, it really doesn't want to go beyond arousal. Because as I say, subconsciously, arousal equals danger, equals death, equals you're going to get hurt. going beyond that. So it does one of two things. It will subconsciously arrange your engagement with life, the opportunities, the doors that you open, that you perceive to be open. It will effectively just create a life which is a comfort zone, which negates as much as possible the mere chance that you will ever have to face an event that will bring you to confront that inner fear, that aroused state, that worry, that anxiety. You know, many guys, I've coached really powerful, amazing guys that in levels of professional growth, of certain elements of their existence, are extraordinary performers. They're like, I'm in a state of wow. I'm in a state of awe, going, wow, you know, like what you have achieved in your career, financially, whatever, you know, it's like, wow, you know, it's whoa, you know. And yet, some parts, it's like in relationship, that's where their deep trauma was. So, could be a multimillionaire, could be like the top end performer professionally, but might just have no relationship at all. It's like, oh, you know, just this idea, oh, well, relationships don't work out for me. I've yet to find the right one, but like deep down, there was just a state of arousal. Actually, there was a lot of self-sabotage. I can think of several different guys, and I used to self-sabotage within marriage, so I'm not saying that there's any commentary these guys unique to them. I hold my hand up always. But it was like this idea of just self-sabotaging subconsciously. There again, it's like me in my early 20s, like, oh, you know, inner pain. No, I'm fine, I'm good. Self-sabotaging subconsciously. It's called by one guy, Gay Hendricks, like upper limiting, where there's just this glass window where beyond which you just won't go. Your psyche will not go beyond that because it fears just your worst fears, your worst inadequacies are going to be revealed. So it just doesn't go there. And it rationalizes to the point of which it's just normal. It's like, oh, I just haven't found the right one yet. You know, I'm in my mid-40s, just haven't found the right person yet. You're just not looking. And any time you have went in relationships, you self-sabotage. You know, it's like you just see whatever reason imaginable, no matter how irrational it seems, and you latch on to that reason. I remember having a guy I knew. It was the shape of this girl's earlobes was his reason for not going out with her anymore. Literally, she was beautiful. She was like, he liked so many elements of her, but it was like, oh, her earlobes. I really can't. Oh, like, I can't stop looking at them ever since I've noticed. That was the reason. It seems irrational. There's so much irrationality in my own life. When I talk about finances, and when I talk about persistently avoiding inner negativity and the arousal point, just being where the psyche would not want to go, to share with you, you know, with my wounds about how I would relate with finances, up until recently, an appointment, a simple meeting with an accountant, my local accountant, nice guy, I would have this irrational fear, like I would want to jump out the window. It'd be like, let's get in, get out. I would dissociate. He'd have to ask me questions twice. And it's only now, with being more trauma-informed and having done so many levels of deep inner work, facing my pain, the intensity of it in deep intimacy and parenting and inner work and how I'm relating within myself, that, you know, I'm now have moved on significantly on that topic. I shared with you. You know, I would have been embarrassed to share this with you several years ago because I didn't have the trauma-informed perspective where it's like, I'm normal. There's nothing abnormal with me having wanted to jump out that window. I now understand it. There's this beautiful thing of, you know, in deep trauma work, we can't actually relax into the pressure of what we're feeling, of these so-called, these challenging emotions, until we understand why it is we're feeling what we're feeling. Effectively, it's like we will put the cause on the outer external conditions. It's like I could put the calls on, well, my accountant, he's a bit fucking ignorant, isn't he? You know, it's like, you know, I'd rationalize. It's like, I feel uncomfortable with him. Well, I should just change accountant. Put it on him. I've put it on my queen for so long. It's like, oh, well, I'm feeling uncomfortable and I'm feeling rejected because she has issues. She's been so wounded with the divorce growing up and all the shit in her family. Of course, I feel rejected because she just rejects masculinity. Blah, blah, blah. You know, I put the cause on the outside, and this is what our brains do. We blame some external situation. I'm feeling pissed off and frustrated because my boss is just an asshole. You know, we put it, the causes on the outside. So it's rational that I'm feeling what I'm feeling because this is the reason. Doesn't matter how irrational it seems, the reason why we do it is one of the last things that the human mind can contend with, is just owning that emotion as our own without having an explanation for it. You know, me having such an irrational fear, wanting to jump out the fucking window of the accountant's office when he went out to get paperwork or whatever for me to sign, wanting to, like, really just, I'd have a knot in my stomach driving up for that meeting. For me to really just have relaxed into it and gone without the trauma-informed perspective would be on a level to go, Mark, you're fucking crazy. You're mad. This has no sense. You're mad in the head. It would be, for me, without the grounded perspective, just going, you're the mad one. And we don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. It's actually to be the mad one in the crowd. This is where, you know, for most perspectives, we keep this inner negativity. We keep the, you know, it's, I think statistically, about 49%, depends on different research, of course, but it's reported about 49% of men around the world. 49%. It's like, it's a big, big number. 49% of men will suffer much higher levels of depression and anxiety than they're willing to share with friends or family. So it's like a silent epidemic of inner pain that is just being silently suffered in the background without feeling able to reveal it. Why? Because it's just without having deep wisdom and knowledge of how trauma happens and why it occurs, and it's like totally rational. There's a rational explanation for it all. Without having done deep inner work, you can feel really fucking weird. You can feel really inadequate. You can feel a real failure, but you're not. You can feel totally mad, totally crazy in the head. Like there's something fucking broken with you. I felt that I was totally broken in so many areas of my life. Here's the thing, you're not broken. The warrior way to ending inner pain forever. You know, it's when you learn to embrace the pressure, it's like, just think of the training, you know, the jiu-jitsu training, warrior training, Navy SEAL training. It's embrace the pressure, embrace the pressure, embrace the pressure. Reminding ourselves that our nervous system will adapt to whatever pressure we put it in front of. Of course, there's a wise way to go at this, and it helps to be in a tribe, in a community. That's why, you know, I've started up Kings of Freedom. Check it out. www.kingsoffreedom.me, the membership. Just starting a powerful tribe of men that we can come in together, so you will have the conscious support of other powerful men that are willing to do the inner work, that are hungry, that are driven to reveal their greatest power, the King of Freedom, the King archetype within them. You'll be in a community of men that get you, that will be safe and hold a safe, sacred space where you can reveal what's going on for you. And as you reveal it, they reveal more. And as they reveal it, you can go, wow, me too. And then you have this safe network where this work is happening in a safe, sacred, confidential space. It's really important to have that dojo. You know, the dojo, the training area, like in jiu-jitsu, you don't train in the streets, you train on the mats in uniform with a disciplined teacher, a guide that will guide you in a safe way to ever more expanding levels of intensity. So it's going to be safe as much as possible. thinking of jiu-jitsu, you know, it's like in the relating with pain, it's actually the core self-defense approach. Brazilian jiu-jitsu is predominant. It's a self-defense martial arts. They talk about green, red, green. And it's how you relate with pain, actually. Green, where you're safe when you're defending yourself against somebody else. But that, think of yourself and there's somebody attacking you. But think about yourself, and within the context of this conversation, that thing that's attacking you is your greatest fear. It's your inner pain. It's that inadequacy. It's that fear, sadness, grief, unexpressed anger that you fear could take you over. Think of that as the attacker. So in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, to talk about green, red, green, it's like you're safe when you're standing and controlling the distance between yourself and the attacker to such a point which, if they swing and they fling a punch at you, their fist, or they swing a kick at you, you're keeping a distance between yourself and the attacker to such a point that the kick can't land, their punch can't land. You're in the green zone, you're safe. The red zone is when you get in so close, there's this point where you're in the red zone where you're close enough to them where the full force of a punch to your face, a kick to your body, they can get you. You're in the red zone. You're not safe there. The next part is the green zone. You go beyond the red and into the green. Now you're hugging your attacker in so close that they can't get a full punch at you. And if they get, it's like you're hugging yourself. You brace them at their body. Some of you might have done jiu-jitsu before. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Others of you that aren't familiar, just imagine it. It's like if you're doing boxing, you know, a boxer is safe. You'll see them. The referee has to break them apart because there's a point where you can just get in so close where the guy can't punch you. You know, boxing, they have to break them apart because you can't box if you're in there. Jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, that's the whole principle. Get in so close to the body that a kick, a knee, a punch, an elbow, a headbutt, it just can't happen. And then from there, you can manipulate the person in such a way that you can defeat them. That's the core point and purpose of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's due. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu 101, done and dusted. Green, red, green. This is a very interesting thing because it's the exact same approach with your inner pain. You know, the green zone subconsciously is that if you stay so far away from your inner pain, you are unaffected by it. But the thing about this is, you know, so far away from ever experiencing the emotional nervous system arousal that you never ever want to meet that pain. Can you do it? As I say, life will smack you in the forehead with a shovel at some point. It will put you in front of that pain. You can put it off. You can disengage with life. Like, ultimately, life smacking you with a shovel in the forehead, like, the ultimate one is death. You can avoid pain, inner pain, avoid fear, avoid inadequacy, to the point at which you're fucking, like, 80, 85, 90 years old, you're in a nursing home, and then that's hell. Because life will smack you in the forehead with regret, the pain of regret. You're looking back at your life going, yeah, I was afraid when I was in my mid-30s. I was afraid of relationship. I was afraid of parenting. I was afraid of actually showing up as a parent. I was afraid of writing that book. I was afraid of travel. And yeah, I just comfort zoned it. And now I look back and all I see is regret. Oh, I can't imagine such pain. I'm like I think that's the greatest fear I have, to let you know. One of the greatest fears, if not the pinnacle greatest fear I have, it's not of death. It's meeting death, looking back, going, fuck me, Mark. I mean, yeah, you met these teachings, they were super cool stuff, but like what you knew you wanted to do in your, like when you were 38, today I'm 38 doing this podcast episode, it's like meeting life when I'm 78, 88, 98, 148, whatever it is, when I'm there looking back, excuse me, on the expanse of my life, my greatest fear is not death, it's dying with regret. Dying with the regret of looking back going, oh my fucking God, there was so much more music I wanted to bring. I wanted to love my life so much more. I wanted to be of greater service. I had that mission of Kings of Freedom, but I just didn't do it. I came off the podcast. I started getting all these fears. I let my inner demons take me over, etc., etc., etc. That's my great fear. It's not debt. It's meeting debt with a mountain of regret. It's meeting debt going, I've avoided inner negativity so much, but now I'm looking back and all I see is a scarred life, a life of memories, an autobiographical overview of my life where it's just scars everywhere of where I didn't show up. That's when I didn't love that person. That's when I didn't express my truth. That's when I didn't set the boundary. That's when I didn't write that book. That's when I didn't push the podcast through to full completion and full service of all these amazing men around the world. That's when I didn't. That's my great fear. That fear, that can only happen if I persistently avoid inner negativity. The pressure awakening inner nirvana, and there again, would you? Like, how are you relating with life? Are you relating in the jujitsu, the first green, which is stay the fuck away from your attacker. Stay away from your fear. Stay away from, you know, your inner pain. Stay away. Never engage. But you're going to be on the run. Can you keep yourself physically fine by doing that? Yeah, you can just, but you're going to run. It's ultimately, it's cowardice. You're running from the attacker. You're running from your inner pain. You set up your entire life to never engage with your pain. The other way is learn jujitsu, is learn attack it, is learn lean in towards it. And attack it with such warrior intentionality that you're not in the red zone. You don't get hurt. You get in so close and you become so intimately close with your fear that you know what your fears are, you know what your inner pain is, you know what your edge is, but you confront it on a day to day, moment to moment, day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year basis, that you grow, that you learn to attack, you learn to open up to it. I remember talking about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I remember, like, I had such a deep fear of physicality, in a sense of aggressive physicality. I was good in Gaelic football, Irish football. It's quite a contact sport. It's very intense. I was really comfortable with that. But physical aggression to the point of being attacked, I had a deep fear of. A deep judgment of guys that were aggressive. I had a really profound Mr. Nice Guy. You know, it's like, I wouldn't. It was like a moral high ground of, you know, it's only these low cretins that are get aggressive, etc., etc. Very judgmental part of my mind. So when I started doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I was like, I had quite the fear of these guys that were really intense, that were quite a sort of aggressive, like within, they were disciplined, they were safe, but they were aggressive, they were so fucking intense. But my way of improving, I remember early on in our local club, there was this Polish guy called Adrian, and fuck, I learned to love Adrian, but there was like a deep fear. I had a pit of anxiety going up the steps to the training dojo every day that I was training. But I would just learn. I mean, I would go to roll with him first. I would choose him first. You know, when the training session, the routine training was over, we'd just have like 20 minutes at the end where we'd roll with whoever was there. I'd go to him first, like, hey Adrian, let's roll. At the end, Adrian would always like want to roll one or two more rolls, 5 minute rolls beyond when the training was over. Anytime he'd ask, I'd say yes, default yes. And he'd in some ways like hammer the shit out of me. Not like, I'd come back home bruised and like I was very I was in my early days of jiu-jitsu, my movement, my ways of defending myself, I was so sort of clumsy just because of the early stage. I wasn't able to protect myself. He was doing everything fine, but I was so intense and so tightened up, which is totally not the way. I was so tightened up that I'd end up going home bruised and battered because of my inefficiency of movement. But I just learned by going, yeah, I will embrace the storm. in relationship with my queen. As I say, 12 years of avoiding the intensity of the feminine shitstorm, running from it. Guys, fucking running from it. Cowardice, complete. Run, run, run. It would infuriate Matilda so much. The last few years, it's like, point to the storm. Get to the storm. You know, green, red, green is the jiu-jitsu way of describing it. The feminine shitstorm. The storm, there's two ways where you can avoid the intensity of the storm, the feminine storm. And feminine represents the unpredictability of life as well. The feminine force in the universe. There's two points. You can run to the outskirts of the storm, that you go beyond the effects, the winds, where the storm can affect you in any way. And the further away from the center of the storm you are, the less intense the effects are and the consequences are. But you're running. You're running away. That's one point of escape. The other point of escape is green, red, green. Point towards the storm. The eye of the storm. The intensity. Run for it. So you learn to relate to the feminine emotional, irrational shitstorm in relationship with your queen, but also in relationship with life, with your greatest fear. You learn to face it, face on, and stride, run, embrace it, bring it on type. Just fucking, it will pressure awakening inner nirvana. Your freedom is accessible only at the center of that storm. And you just have to face your greatest fears and you go into it. You face the hyper arousal of your nervous system. You gain the tribal support within the membership or coaching, etc., etc. But you fucking go for it. And your greatest spiritual freedom as a man is accessible at the center of the storm. You might feel that there's safety going outside of the storm. Running away from your greatest potential, running away from your greatest fear. Your greatest potential, your greatest fearless freedom as a man is only accessible. Your full spiritual liberation is exclusively accessible when you learn to face pain, to face that inner negativity, to face the inner demons and march, run, embrace them, hug them, kiss them, hold them close, hold them dear, that you access the center of the storm. Inner pain only holds an intoxicating effect over your psyche when you're running from it. Inner pain ceases to exist when you just go for it. You relax into it, you embrace it, you learn to love it so much that it just ceases to exist. Does it take support? Yeah, of course. Every warrior has a training partner. Every warrior has a mentor. Every warrior has a support network of powerful men that are doing the work. Try to do it alone? Good luck with that. Persistently avoiding inner negativity is the way of the lone wolf. That's true for me. It's true for every man that tries to approach the challenges of life as a lone wolf. By yourself. That's social conditioning. Lone wolfing does not work. You won't access your greatest freedom, your greatest potentiality. You will not live. It's impossible to live as a king of full embodied freedom as a lone wolf. Pressure, awakening, inner nirvana. Coming into landing here. Powerful, warrior, magnificent men around the world. Kings of freedom. Your freedom, it's a potentiality. It's that seed of potentiality that is in you now. It's not something that is accessible 40 years from now. Yeah, there's a training, but it's there. There's a freedom in you now. There's a voice. There's a genius. There's a brilliance in you right now. The only thing that is wrapping that brilliance up, that is hiding that brilliance from your whole life or parts of your life, is fear. It's inner pain and your relationship with pain. Yet coming into landing, my challenge to you, setting the gauntlet down to you, is reflect on this the rest of today. Come back to this episode again and again and ask yourself, it's like, where am I minimizing and normalizing my relationship with pain? Where am I not going because of a subconscious pain? Where am I scared shitless to go? Where am I not expressing my fullness? Where am I minimizing and normalizing an aspect of my being that is not becoming of the have-it-all kingdom creator vision I would have for my life? Where is that part? And learn to embrace it. Learn to call that pressure. Relate with that pressure. Green, red, green. Go to the inner green. The storm. You don't seek relief by running from the storm. Where is that storm? And fucking face it on and start marching towards it. And do whatever it is on a moment-to-moment, day-to-day basis to become comfortable with that storm. And you will see your psyche, your nervous system will adapt and do whatever is necessary to support you in that process. I mentioned in the last episode, and this is part of my deep commitment to serve you wonderful men that are listening in. You know, the warrior way to ending inner pain forever. Definitely seeking some powerful conscious support to hold a safe and sacred space for you as you learn to take the first steps or the next necessary steps on your sacred journey. It's essential to have a mentor, a coach, somebody on the outside, a bunch of men in this creating a culture here within this movement as the snowball gently expands and more men start listening in. I really want to extend in the deepest intention to serve you all individually, and by men being served individually, the whole movement improves and progresses and deepens. I want to extend a heart-centered invitation to you. Reach out to me and I will receive that email and will get back to you personally. In a safe and confidential communication, reach out to me at hello@kingsoffreedom.me. hello@kingsoffreedom.me. I will have the link in the podcast description and all episodes. Reach out to me. If there's some part of your inner pain where you just know, you just like some support with that, my invitation is we can organize. I would be more than willing, any man that's willing to open up to that sacred type of conversation, whatever your position is in life, if you're listening in, you're a sacred member of this tribe, of this movement, the Kings of Freedom, reach out. I will gift you, and it will be my honor and privilege to organize, to put by 2 hours where I can co-create a deep coaching, masculine mastery conversation with you, where effectively, you know, I'll just support you in embracing the storm, in going green, red, green, just leaning into that storm, leaning into that inner pain. And the point beyond is where your fearless freedom will be, where your greatest potential will be. So I want to just extend that heart-centered invitation to you. I am here to serve. Kings of Freedom, the podcast, the movement, the membership, it's a movement about awakening sacred masculine power and potency around the planet, and it only starts with you guys that are listening in. I honor you, so it's my gift to you. It's up to you to make use of it. In this, the last episode, I want to honor the few guys that sent me messages. I put the invitation out there. I've received emails in. It's actually beautiful to get that feedback, and in honoring those guys, I want to honor you. Just feeling into it. The invitation is there for you at any phase. Just send in a message and we can make it happen. With that said, coming into landing, the end of another beautiful, wholehearted, radically honest and intimate conversation with you magnificent men around the world. The warrior way to ending inner pain forever. Your fearless freedom lies beyond where you embrace, you hug, you kiss, you attack consciously with conscious aggression, with wholehearted warriorship. You embrace the storm of your inner pain. You face it up and you go, I'm fucking taking you down. I am fearlessly just going to march towards that as the courageous, radically authentic man that I am. And the radical authentic part of you, which is the author of your life, you only become radically authentic when you alter your life without inner pain dictating where you can go, what you can do, what life you can write out. It's on your terms as the king of freedom that you are only when you're writing that story authentically beyond your greatest fears, beyond your subconscious inner pain, beyond those inner demons, the dragons inside your mind. That's where you truly are, the king of freedom that you are, living and dying without regret because you know you came, you saw, you conquered. What has been said, let it remain perfect as it was said, and knowing it has served you all individually, collectively, in a powerful way. What remains unsaid will be said at another time, another date, when it will serve perfectly on that day. With deep bows, big love, go have a beautiful, amazing, kingly day.
Thank you for listening to the Kings of Freedom podcast. To receive no BS proven strategies to unlock limitless levels of peace, power, and purpose as you lead your family and create your have-it-all life, sign up now to the Kings of Freedom email list. Find the link in the podcast episode description or at www.kingsoffreedom.me.